From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life.
Welcome to the Beckham's Basement Park Circle Roundtable. We have a three-man booth today for this special podcast, and this is really to get you through the doldrums of the international break, what we like to call the slow season. This is, fortunately, the last one, I believe, until like March or something. I think we are free and clear. We have club football from this point on through the remainder of 2024 and then into 2025. And I think that's going to be a very welcomed addition to the calendar, because you're going to see a lot of teams now have to deal with injuries, not get that break. You're going to see this is usually where, if someone, it's this time of year where Man City usually makes a run because they can get 3 or 4 months under their belts of the same lineup. You don't have to worry about any kind of injuries. They can rotate the squad. This is also where, if you're a team like Liverpool and you're 5 points out, you have to worry about squad depth at this point, because you're not going to get the break. Your international breaks are done. It's going to get very, very hectic during the Christmas season. You're going to have Boxing Day. It's all going to be wham, bam, bam. So lots of fixtures, lots of domestic play still in effect, FA Cup, the DFB Pokal, Coppa Italia is going to kick off for the big teams. And of course, you have the Energy Drink Cup in England and the FA Cup. And then, of course, the Champions League as well. So, and Europa League and Conference League. So without further ado, let's jump right in. We're going to talk a little bit about the United States men's national team, though, as the three gentlemen who are here with you, myself and Nick and Tim. Tim is making his Beckham's Basement debut this afternoon, so we welcome him to the show. He's a longtime listener and friend of the show, and we talk a lot of football, the three of us, and this time we're just going to get it on the record. Some thoughts and some things that we think may or may not happen, what we saw in the match that we all watched, the Jamaica match together this past Thursday evening, and we're just going to get some thoughts about what we saw. So let's kick it right off, guys. Pochettino, now 6 weeks or so, 6 weeks, 8 weeks with the team. He was managing the United States national team, I believe, in that Mexico loss. The Mexico loss was the one where Nick was talking a bunch of shit and got a lot of feedback. Yeah. Actually, to this day, we still get comments. Yeah. We still get comments on the post that he delivered. And he doesn't even know, because this bastard turns off his notifications. So I'm the only one that actually sees it. And I'm like, Nick, you've pissed off every single Azteca, Estadio Azteca visitor, frequenter, fan. El Tree is pissed at you. And then, of course, he just got added ammunition when they lost to Honduras 2-0 just a few days ago. So let's talk about the first, before we get into anything with Mexico or stuff like that. Let's talk about the...
That's just Nick driving customer engagement.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all he really is doing, is just driving customer engagement. So, gentlemen, what do we see when we think about this last performance against Jamaica? So they score a goal. Pepe scores a goal in the first 5 minutes, and then there's absolutely nothing in between for the next 85 plus stoppage time. We saw nothing. We actually saw Pulisic, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, take a couple of unnecessary dives, tried to probably draw a foul that wasn't there. I mean, he was acting, you know, he was, I mean, for better lack of terms, he's just acting like LeBron James hoping for a card for somebody. And you know, I don't want to see that. I want to see if you have the advantage, play the advantage. Don't drop. you know, what's that's going to stop the play? You're going to have to go to try figure out a free kick when actually you have the advantage. Keep going with it. So what, Nick, first I'll start with you. What were your thoughts on that match? I mean, I'm leaving the room. Quick thoughts from me as it's a 1-0 victory, but I wasn't impressed.
Yeah, no, I said it on, I think on maybe our TikTok. This is going to take time, and this is just don't lose so you don't look terrible and don't get people talking, but try out new people. I said it. First thing when I saw Tessman was I was glad that he was trying him, even though Leon got some bad news. We got good news with him starting for the men's national team. I just think that Poch needs to try people. I think he needs to let Reen play a few more games and maybe have him there for captaincy or for something for the cup, just for leadership. He needs to start looking for a better center back pair. It's just a lot of stuff needs to change. And right now he's just making those slow changes. And that's exactly what you want. All I want is for him to figure out his guys, not Greg, the bald fraud, Berhalter's, not his guys, because his guys clearly didn't work. 2-1 Netherlands, you had a chance, but because of your lack of quality, your lack of depth, Netherlands go up 3-1, you lose a playoff game in the World Cup. It's over with, done. With Pochettino, you would think 2-1, maybe we have a chance to draw 2-2. Just with those little bit of changes that can happen. So I just think that it was good in my mind because you see a few new faces. Johnny played. Of course, he goes out hurt. He likes going out hurt. They got to keep these guys healthy. You got to make sure that these guys have their time before the cup so they stay healthy. We talked about Pulisic getting hurt, how it would destroy the team. Like, injuries are going to be a problem. Or could be a problem, and these new faces are going to really have to gel. I like what I see. I don't really care about how it looked at the moment because we're trying those new people. Pulisic did flop a lot. That was ridiculous. It did get testy. The guy who got the red card was pushing people around the whole game. He deserved it. He was their hitman. He was their Tom Wilson. He was their...
That's the guy that got sent off.
Yes.
I think he did a snot rocket. A la Erling Haaland. Would have made the mutant jealous, that snot rocket.
Yes.
Precision passing on the snot rocket.
Absolutely.
He didn't even fight it. I mean, he knew immediately.
Yeah, he just walked right off. He was their hitman. He was there.
It was great.
He held his head down. He walked right off because he knew that what he had done, he was just the hitman the whole time. That's all he was there to do. So a lot of takeaways, man. People, you can't really get upset. You got the 1-0. You're going to St. Louis. You're minus 280 at home. I mean, it's pretty comfortable. 1-0 lead. If Jamaica score first, then game on. But if USA open the scoring, then that's pretty much done and over with. I think Pochettino just needs to keep calling these other guys up. Leave the MLS guys to their 7-game playoff fixtures, and that's it, man. Just give them his time, and we got a whole calendar year. Win the Nations League. And move forward. Just keep adding those Nation League trophies. Maybe put another one in the cabinet and start out good for Pochettino.
Well, Tim, here's a question for you. So we talked about this before we started recording. So let's get this on the record. You know, we talked about the fact that we had an early goal from the United States, possible offside. The flag never went up, but they didn't VAR anything. I don't think they could afford VAR in Jamaica. Yeah. It was definitely like one of those nights where whatever goes, goes. The obviously now Turner made the save. There's nothing to be argued about that. Beautiful save. Damari Gray just, you know, he put the ball in a place where Turner could get a hand to it. So then Ream, even the Americans afterwards said, I forget who the commentator is. I said he's a pompous bastard. the analyst that came, the pundit that came on afterwards. Anyways, but he made a good point. He said, yeah, I mean, should have been another penalty. Possible 1-1 draw. If Damari Gray hits his, it's a 2-1 victory for Jamaica potentially. Yeah. But Ream had a handball in the box. Even the American pundits are like, there's no debating it. Like, it didn't get seen. It didn't get called. So with that being said, when you the save from Turner is what it is, but then you have a potential other handball. The United States didn't do anything for 90 minutes after the 5th minute goal. or how are you left feeling after this match?
So first off, if they can't keep the pitch in better condition, they're damaging out a folding bar, right? So you might have had a camcorder or two out in the audience.
It was a Swiss hole, Swiss cheese pitch. Yes,
I mean, huge divots. I was waiting for the broken ankle report. Yeah, and that first penalty, I thought that was a pretty dodgy call. I thought Turner had every right to go after the ball. Didn't make an obvious swipe at the guy, but you know, saved it. So it equalized it out. It didn't matter at all. And those bang bang plays, if you don't have the ability to look at it after the facts, you know, ring with a little nudge, a little chicken wing, nudge it off. I think, yeah, coming out to a great start was good, and then we just kind of let the physical game push us off of whatever plan we had. I think that's why we saw early dives, because we know that people play Pulisic's very physical, and so they wanted to get that on the record. Mm-hmm. They didn't want it to be like, oh, they're just going to push us around all match like we've seen against Costa Rica and others. So I would love to see a little bit better plan to get through the midfield. It was better than like the Mexico match, because we just got gummed up, couldn't get it through the mid. Had a little bit more freedom of movement, but yeah, the physicality, we're going to have to figure out how to deal with that.
We're not a very physical team.
No.
I mean, they get pushed around. Yeah. And we talked about this, Tim, offline weeks ago about how there's no enforcer. Like, you know, you need an Arturo Vidal who, exactly. If you have a guy with a mohawk that comes on the pitch, he did it for Bayern Munich, he did it for Juventus, he did it for Barcelona, right? And he did it for Chile. And he's just going to mug you. He's just going to, like, dude, you get in my, if you get in Alexis Sanchez's face for Chile, I'm going to mug you. Yeah. I'm going to beat the shit out of you. And we don't have that. We have guys like Scally that'll come and like tug, like, come on, dude. Come on.
Desmond could be that. Desmond's got
Test a big guy. I think Adams did it a little bit. We saw flashes of Adams being a bulldog and doing it. And then we got to remember, Sir Dest is gone, and Dest is a little pit bull, too.
Dest needs a little bit of a governor on the engine, right?
Yes, absolutely. His governor's off. But we were missing a couple guys who could potentially be that enforcer. But we do need, I'm telling you, of a guy like Vidal would change everything. I agree with that, because he is going to be your pit bull.
The only problem with it is he's Chilean.
Yes.
He's
not American.
But to that point, though, I wanted to say, to compare and contrast here. I asked the question, and we all kind of gave our answer on it, and I'll repeat it here for the record. I said, you know, people are saying that this is the golden generation of American football. I mean, American football, not American football like that egg ball. But and I don't think that has come yet. If anything, you know, I think it's to be in the future, because I think now we might be seeing the tides turn. But if you are going to say there was one, it has to be the late 90s through early 2010s team. And I saw a bunch of bulldogs on that team. Like you brought it up that Tim Howard by himself was someone you didn't mess with. But you had Michael Bradley. You had Clint Dempsey would get in your face. I mean, Pulisic will bitch and moan, but he's a twig. Yeah. I mean, I'm not taking him in a fight against hardly anybody, especially not that Jamaican enforcer. He would knock his teeth out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what are you guys thinking about this in terms of like the American golden generation? Because they certainly don't have the silverware or the world ranking to back that up. That generation that I just said previously made it all the way up to the FIFA number 4 ranking in 2006, which they quickly lived down because they got undressed in the group stage of the World Cup. But nevertheless, there were a lot of our players playing in Europe, you know, Tim Howard, Everton, you had players like that. And I talked about John Brooks. John Brooks was playing first tier Bundesliga.
Yeah.
And he's still playing second tier to this day. But they were like, man, you know, he was playing for Wolfsburg. He was playing for Hamburg. And he was a center back that was a force, you know, quiet enforcer. Don't piss him off, you know. So what are we – this next generation looks too finesse for me.
I've heard you guys talk about this on the pod for a long time, calling it the golden generation. I call it the golden opportunity, because these guys are resulting from those teams. That got those kids energized. And now they've got the passion when they can actually – they're old enough to do it.
Yeah.
So we've got a little momentum. All the things that Berhalter got wrong, he actually built somewhat of a talent pipeline outside of MLS. It's got people, you know, almost everybody on that pitch is playing either top league or second in Europe. It's a great opportunity to keep the momentum going and keep people coming through.
Yeah, only one guy was MLS, and really he could have not started Reem, but Reem's that old guy that could be –
Reeves there for stability.
Exactly. And that's the only guy on that pitch who started in the MLS. And everyone else was top tier. I don't think any single one of those players, because Busio, because Vienza was promoted, everyone's in a top league.
Right.
So there was no guy from Cologne. There was no guy from Schalke. Yeah. They were all top tier teams, and that's what you want to see. I mean, Tesman, Leon. I mean, you want to see these guys who are playing against good talent time in and time out, because you're going to face those European guys in the World Cup, which is what the being decent in the World Cup is what the goal is.
Our front line, we have everybody in a top league, and yeah, even a backup. Right, we're on a backup striker. He's still in the top league.
Yeah,
let's touch. All of our mids are in respectable teams. It's the back line that we're struggling
yes.
on, right? If
yes.
we had more talent, we wouldn't probably play Ream.
Yes.
Once Adams is back and more back, fit, then probably he won't play Ream as much, but yeah. he is there for that leadership. I worry about the defense. That's it, right? Jedi's great on the back left. Dest will be good, but it would take a long time for him to get back in form.
Yeah.
It's these other guys.
He's got a killer crossover.
Yeah.
Destin.
Yes.
Like Allen Iverson.
Final that we watched with Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was the best player on the pitch. It's good he's going to be healthy for when we need him. But
yeah.
I mean, Barcelona guy. I mean, the guy is good quality, man. I can't wait to see him back. I keep forgetting he's missing, and that's going to change a lot. That puts a lot more talent on the pitch, man.
Yeah.
I forget. Yeah.
Well, we talked a couple weeks ago that even like the Jose Altidore. That interview,
yeah.
they're saying like, there's more quality players, but we were more quality.
Yeah, more complete team.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's my next point. I wanted to ask this. Am I the only one? And I swear to God, this is the case. Weston McKennie impresses me always more with Juventus than he does for country.
Yeah.
I've watched so many games of him in a USA kit, and I'm always like, where's the Serie A version of that?
Yeah.
He just looks like he's kind of going through the motions. It's like paint by numbers. And at Juventus, and I mean, look, there's a lot of players. We've talked about Miroslav Klose.
Yeah.
He's the greatest goal scorer. Messi will never, ever be able to talk about goals in the World Cup because Klose has got that record on lockdown. The next closest guy, well, I think is also German, Thomas Müller, or he's very close to it. He's got 10 or 11. And it's like, but you look at what did Klose do with Kaiserslautern? What did he do with Bayern? What did he do with Lazio? And you're like, I mean, he was good. He wasn't a world beater, but Joachim Löw understood in the national team, his role, he fulfills his role superbly.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just have a knack for it. Yeah. And it's almost with Weston McKennie, the opposite. I think he's great for Juventus. I mean, I like, especially this season, I've seen an uptick in his play. And then I'm always looking for that to translate. And look, it's a different set of players. You're not playing with Vlahovic up front. You're not playing, and that's a world class striker. You've got who you've got. And do you think the talent around him at Juventus elevates him? Do you think it's the lack thereof with the United States men's national team, where he then becomes lesser than because he plays up and plays down to who he has around him? Is that because he's the one guy on paper besides Pulisic, you can say he could play for a lot of other national teams that are above us.
Yeah. I think it's that it's just such a more well-established team, more well-established tactics. We're still getting, he's getting used to Poch. I think he hasn't really seen pitch that much, right? So they've got to establish themselves with these guys that you don't see now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
I mean, he's got a credible like cross in the play, right? He's got that great long pass. We didn't see that at all last match.
No.
Yeah.
And he got subbed off.
Yeah.
And he came off.
Tactical, man. I think it comes down to the tactics. The guy, it's just different in Italy. You know, you got this new manager. And we talk about the Italians play style all the time, man.
Yeah.
You know, we watched Inter and Napoli, and Napoli played that anti-football. And a lot of times, Italy matches, you don't see a lot. It's a lot of defensive stuff. So it's just, I think it's going to take time for him to wake up. I mean, we saw what he can do with the goals. He scored, God, man, McKennie scored a couple banger goals before. It's just, I just think it's going to take a little bit of time to acclimate Pasta acclimate the system and whatnot into it.
It's funny you mentioned that Inter game, because that was one of the games where I remember recently I was like, oh wow, man, McKinney really balled out this game. That's the 4-4 game we saw where it was a goal fest, when we said, oh, take the under. I mean, for sure. Like, this is going to end 1-1 at the best case scenario, probably 1-0 victory for Inter, if anything else. And you look at these players, I mean, that's where Timothy Bea scored in that game. He got a goal.
Yeah.
So you're looking at I look at the Serie A generation of players, so Bea, McKinney, Pulisic, because those are the top three players, and they play in an elite league.
Yeah.
And they're all very good players in that league. So you look at them as like, well, before this generation of players, only four or five of the Americans had even attempted Serie A, and they were quickly ousted out. There was nothing for them. No one was making it for them. So it's one of those things where you're just like, that's the core, but what is it around?
Yeah.
I'm looking to see, you know, especially with those guys playing in pairs, those synergies of the Juve guys and Milan guys. To kind of build a framework around that they've got such good trust on their own teams.
So, Nick, did you see any tactical changes, you personally, from Poch? I mean, did you see anything between – let me ask this. Between the Mexico match, which we all know was kind of a science experiment.
I literally didn't pay attention.
Well, because we knew this is – every manager comes in, and it just so happened that Mexico was the team that was on the fixture list as the next. But if it had been Armenia, if it had been Venezuela, if it had been Azerbaijan, you have to figure out what you've got.
Yeah.
And so probably United States was going to lose whoever they played. If it was Liechtenstein, it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
So now I figured out what we've got, and this is where we're going. But did you see anything tactically where you saw it moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's slowly but surely moving more towards what Poch does. I mean, he used Kane and Son and Ali so well up front, but he also did do a lot of like Argentinian style quick pressing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw some defensive stuff differently. I feel like they got to the ball a lot quicker. Like, they weren't just setting back as much, more so than Greg. But it's just going to take more than a game or two for Poch to really put in anything he did with Son and with the Paris Saint-Germain guys. I see slowly there's a little things changing just watching that match last time. But I mean, I feel like they're focusing a little bit more defensively. We're just missing a lot of players offensively, where I think you really can see what they can do up front with Adams and Dest being gone. And I just trying to figure out the Pepe and Sargent thing too is taken away a little bit because they're trying to figure that slot out. So it's just going to take time, man. This was game two. I tell you what. We'll see Jamaica and USA Monday, and I think we'll see a lot more of him trying stuff tomorrow. We'll see more of him implementing more of his stuff.
Well, Tim, that's a question. Does America, with a 1-0 aggregate lead, try stuff, as Nick is putting it, or do you just take that and say we're going to quietly advance?
Honestly, I think, you know, he's got more of like a 2-year plan, right?
Yeah. Greg never. Well, it has to be.
Greg
I mean,
never had.
You don't really have a choice. I mean, 2026
But Greg never had more than like a 2-match plan, right?
Yes, so right. Yeah.
At this point, I think it's like you say, he's getting things out there. It's like he's got his backup quarterback in there. He's got a simplified playbook. Like, all right, we're going to keep it simple. Yeah. See what we can do.
Yeah, short dumps.
Exactly.
Yeah. Short dumps. It's like
quick slant.
This is the old dink and dunk.
Yes.
Exactly. West Coast offense. Yeah. Steve Young's dropping the ball.
Keep it simple.
8 yards. Exactly. The tight end. Yeah.
So, I think once he's got a better feel on who's got what kind of capabilities in kind of implementing those kind of tactics, then you'll start seeing it. Maybe make some introductions here in this next match.
Yeah.
Because you're going to see the same folks. He doesn't want to lay it all out the first match. He wants to maybe save a little bit for this fall.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, I have another question, and this has always been sort of debated, and I think it was said for that 2006 World Cup, that group between 02 that made it to their first quarterfinals of the World Cup. Now, granted, and we've talked about this a million times, who did they beat to get there? They had a round of 16 match with Mexico.
Yeah.
So unless it's Mexico, the United States cannot get anywhere anytime soon in any right. major tournament. But they did draw Mexico in the round of 16, which is a miracle. They beat them,
yeah.
and now they're in the quarterfinals. So it's the furthest that the modern era of American football has made it.
Yeah.
And do we think that this team, do we think that they have, that Posh has enough talent overall to even select from to match up with the world's, say, like top eight? Can this team pull an upset against Argentina? Can this team pull an upset against Germany? Can this team pull the upset against, a team that is better talent-wise but are struggling mightily right now, as we talked about tactically, is Brazil. They're in a world of hurt. This is America's chance to draw Brazil in a round of 16 and beat them. Can they do it? Can they finally? That's the thing is, America's always had a ceiling.
Yeah.
And I look at it a lot of times, it comes down to the fact that great teams can have a bad game and they still win. Germany had not a great game against America at the 2014 World Cup, eventual World Cup champions. But that game against Klinsmann's America, they did not play well. But you always say, well, America still just lack that. They don't have a superstar. They don't have the superstar. So do they have enough talent now with the brainchild of Pochettino to get deep into a tournament, especially one that they're hosting in 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, it depends. England's got all the talent in the world, and they seem to be turning a corner with Tommy T at the front end. Yeah.
But they've made finals with Southgate though.
Yeah,
they've made finals with Southgate. Okay. So that's actually to my even further my point. They have so much talent. They were in finals in spite of Southgate.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Poch is a better manager than Southgate.
Yeah. Right.
So can I mean I'm not debating if Pochettino could win a World Cup with England. He probably could.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm asking, and like Nick said, I mean Tommy T is just, I mean that's going to be a bitch to play England because that guy specializes in knockout tournaments.
Yep.
He hates young players. He hates day to day managing, and he pisses off every single administration he's ever been a part of. But when he gets to play every 2-3 months and he gets a pool of the elite from that country, he's like, I can pick whatever one I want. I am in the candy store football players.
But yes.
So that's the thing, Pochettino. Is there a Kane to pick from in America? Is there a Saka to pick from in America? That's my question. Is there enough talent for Poch to make a difference?
But you almost put a disclaimer in that of like top eight. But Brazil on an off year, right? Like they haven't been playing.
Well, that's an off year in 2026. They're off year right now, but who knows? I mean, they still have a guy named Vinny Jr. that can beat you by himself.
Right, exactly. I think I said earlier, like almost every position is playing in a if not first, top tier, in a very good squad and playing and making a lot of guys making real differences on their squads, and getting a chance. Cause I think in a lot of cases, that was getting to the big stage, kind of put the eyes, wide and like kind of freaked him out a little bit. I think they're getting past that. Where he's playing on bigger stages in their clubs, and I think it's having a positive effect. Can Pochettino implement all these things with as few windows as he had? I would think so. We're going to have to see improvement over each window.
Yeah.
No, I don't know what we'll have next year, but
Nick, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, like, what? I mean, talent. You need talent. Everybody says you need talent. I mean, it's. Could Steve Kerr win without the Splash Brothers? I doubt it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think so.
No.
So I mean, it's just if Steve Kerr doesn't have that team, the LeBron's Cavaliers probably win 3 straight NBA titles.
Yeah.
And then we could be discussing him as Jordan and him in the same race, but didn't happen. Could have, would have, should have. The point is, you do need. And it might is Pulisic Michael Jordan? Is Pulisic Karl Malone? Is Pulisic a Steph Curry? Or is Pulisic just a guy like who's a good John Starks? Good player, all star caliber, but never going to be elite. You could say that about McKinney. But again, Pulisic's one of those guys. You look at his stats at AC Milan, through the roof, absolute top scorer. He bangs in goals left and right. He had like a 5 or 6 match goal streak going for AC Milan. Now, that's hard to do in Serie A. Yeah. Where So that's the question, Nick, is to you, same as I asked him, same to you, is does Poch even have enough time and talent to pull from to get it right? Or is it going to just be they have to upset people? You've got to hope for the upset. You got to hope that whoever they play in the round of 16, whoever they play in the quarters, they're going to have an off day.
Yeah, no, I think he has – I think it's perfect amount of time. I just – I mean, the Cup's in a couple years almost. You have –
We say that.
Yeah.
It'll be here before you know it, because this time next year, November, that's the last international break before the 2026 calendar. You have one last international break between then and the World Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, I think any later would have been a little bit more of a problem, but he has some time to figure it out, and there's plenty of Americans I say plenty. There's a decent amount that are playing. You just got to give them a chance. I mean, I keep bringing up Tesman, but he did it and he gave them a shot. I mean, I watch Belgium, Portugal. There's Americans on those pitches playing that have talent. It's just a matter of finding them and giving them a shot, because we all know that if you ensemble a good team, anything can happen. I mean, you got to look at, there's been teams where it's been a collective group, not just one guy winning the whole thing. I mean, I can't think of an example that comes to mind, but there's a lot of teams that have won stuff where there's no superstar in particular. It was always a collective group, you know, like we talk about the Cavs, they've won 14 in a row. Sure, Donovan Mitchell can be comparative to the superstar, but you've been telling me it's more of like a collective team thing.
It is.
So to say we need like, six guys with that are all, you know, messy, then that's not going to happen. We need to find the guys who are 80, 85 rated who can play together to string together that good run at the right time. I mean, you have teams like Venezuela who are about to qualify for the World Cup, Paraguay who are going to qualify for the World Cup, Jordan are in qualification now. They could possibly make it. You get grouped, it is your favorable draw because it's in your backyard. We all know what happens when it's in your backyard. Qatar, England, all these tournaments that happen in people's backyards, they get favorable draws. If USA can get a favorable draw and get someone like a Ecuador or a Senegal or even a down Brazil, then I give them a snowman's chance, 55% chance to beat that team. And then next thing you know, you're in the second round of the playoff of the World Cup, where, of course, you're going to have to meet somebody like Italy or France. Well, Italy, hell, they ain't made it in years. But someone like France or whoever is there. Speaking of France, they just scored against Italy. No goal last game. They scored in the first 2 minutes this game. So, anyways, it could happen, man. I really feel that with it in the backyard, the FIFA is going to give the right teams to the USA, and they do have the talent to answer your question. They have the talent on the globe. It's just a matter of Poch giving them the shot and giving them the chance. But we're not going to be beating teams 4-0, 5-0. We can't even beat Honduras 4-0, 5-0.
So you're making this, and I was going to go with this question next, and you're just walking right into it. Tim, does it hurt the United States playing in CONCACAF? Because their competition here, we are the giants of CONCACAF. So when you look at CONCACAF, you say, who are your representatives? USA, Canada. Mexico, and now to a lesser extent, because I'm just there, the new kid on the block, Canada. But before this generation of Alphonso Davies, they were a laughing stock. They were a complete joke. So is USA and Canada. When you go to Europe, you rail all 15 teams. You're like, oh my God, well, where do we start? Germany, France, England, Spain, you know, you just go Croatia. Down the line, when you talk about South America, the entire continent's good. At any given time, any of those teams qualify for World Cup. Sometimes Bolivia, sometimes it's Venezuela, like he just said. Sometimes Colombia's missed out because Bolivia's been better. Chile's been good. Chile had a run with Sanchez and Vidal that was amazing. Won Copa America, beat Messi on two occasions. And to the point where Messi was crying in the postgame saying, it's just not meant to be for me. It's just, you know, internationally, it's not meant to be. So, I mean, that's my question is, does America hurt themselves by playing minnows, by playing St. Kitts, and by playing Jamaica, and by playing these small little island nations?
We don't have much of a choice in that, Yeah. I would agree.
But the Western
Hemisphere would play against the Eastern Hemisphere, something like that. Yeah, absolutely. Having better competition pushes you further.
Yeah.
I don't think even that. Well, your point about having a couple of very key guys, like Cannon's living in that life, right? They don't have a team of world beaters, but they have a couple of guys who are fantastic.
Yeah.
I want
to say real quick, I don't mean to interrupt you, but Australia is a great example. Australia was in the Oceanic.
Yeah.
They were with New Zealand, Samoa, Tahiti. I mean, all these teams.
And they joined Asia.
Yeah. And what did they do? They got better. They made quarterfinals one time or something. And there's nothing they could do about. They did what they could, but USA can't just jump over and say we're joining Colombol where we can play Brazil.
That would be great though if they
absolutely.
Do that because we all know this from sons who play their fathers, brothers who play their brothers, sisters who play. You get better by playing better competition. Right. That's how you get better. You don't get better by playing lesser than. Right. I mean, because then when you go up against the bully, you're going to get your teeth kicked in.
Yeah.
So yes, America can piggyback off the consecutive World Cup qualifications because the toughest team you play is El Tri. And look, dude, I mean, God damn, what are you going to say about
at this point? The tougher team is
Canada,
actually.
100%. Right, right. Well, now it is, right? Because now you have a guy who plays for Bayern Munich who's probably going to be playing for Real Madrid soon.
Yeah.
Then on top of that, you have Jonathan David, who plays in France, top of the year.
Who's the left winger? That dude.
Oh, I think he didn't. Inter got one of their midfielders.
Yes, Buchanan.
Yeah.
Tajan Buchanan, yes, and he got injured in international play.
Yeah.
But regardless, you're right. Like, I mean, maybe that's a great quid pro quo, right? That that they would get more the South American teams would get even more money and exposure and everything else. We would get the benefit of
playing better teams.
Yeah, we could get our asses kicked for I don't know, a decade.
But, yeah, playing Uruguay and Colombia year in and year out, we would be it'd make them better for sure. But yeah.
And all the folks who have a chance, you know, that was the big push. I'll still say Greg did the right thing with some dual nationals. You might see more of that.
Yeah.
If they got that kind of.
We got Baldwin.
Yeah.
We got him to come over. And when he found out he wasn't going to play for England, then he was like, fuck this. I'm going where I can play. And he's been hurt too. We're forgetting Balogun will be back too. When you add Balogun, Dest, Adams to that United States team with McKinney and Pulisic. You got to remember that's a whole nother team.
Yeah,
Tessman added in there his tall, big body. I mean, we forget that we're missing. We're not watching the real USA when we watch that Jamaica game. We're just seeing like a AB side.
Yeah,
you know, and then some C guys coming in.
But gives everybody a chance to contribute. Yeah. Gives him a chance to kind of put the pieces together.
God, I forgot about Baldwin. Yeah,
that Paolo gets back.
Yeah. Yeah, because Sargent's not the guy. He could be good coming off and in. And then Pepe, I really don't think he's the end-all, tell-all. He's doing better, but I would rather see Balogun come in or start because I don't – even though I've seen him miss a couple penalties in a game and he's had some misses, I think he'll be better off in the end than Pepe. And bringing Pepe off the bench is what PSV do. And I told Pretty he has 6 goals and – 14 games, but he only plays 10 minutes.
You know what's funny? We talked about this after Tim left because they were you and I made this they made the comment, the commentator, the pundits did. They said he's the star. He's a star at PSV.
Yeah.
And Nick, you said star.
Yeah,
he said star. He's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
But he gets real bitter about hearing
it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Nick's like, he's like, I don't even think this motherfucker played.
He doesn't.
And he looked at his minutes and he's like, he doesn't. He's like, he scores 6 goals in kill off time.
Yeah, in the last 10 minutes.
And it's like, okay, well, I mean, how much do we grade that? It's like, well, if PSV's already up 3-0, then
you don't.
Right. You don't.
And that's the way he does. They'll be up 3-0 against Sporter Rotterdam, and he'll come in and bang 3 in the end, and you're like, okay, cool, but yeah, you were already up 4-0.
Rotterdam.
Yeah, I looked it up, man. Because whenever you said that, I was like, bro, this dude comes in the 82nd.
Yeah, because FC 20 is a fortress.
Yes.
Yeah,
but money talks, right? So I don't know if you can believe all the rumors you see, but if they say that Liverpool is scouting him.
Yeah, they're saying bigger teams are looking. We looked at this up too. He's young, man. He's only 21 or something. It might have been younger. I definitely was shocked by his age.
Yeah.
So him playing like this young is good, but you got to think if he's not somewhere better in a couple years, this time's up.
Well, someone on the major, so outside of Eredivisie, if he's scoring with that kind of efficiency, so if you're giving him, 15 minutes and he's scoring a goal every other game, that's a really high goals per minute.
Yeah. Or 8 goals in 14 games with averaging 12 minutes a game. That's amazing.
It's all analytics.
Right. But I mean, because you could make the same point, like AC Milan had rocks in their head to give Pulisic a chance because he sucked with Chelsea. Like, what analytics are you going to show me that said Christian Pulisic was a Serie A starting caliber, much less for a major club in Serie A, one of the most historic clubs in all of Europe, caliber player coming off his Chelsea career? He was absolute ass there. So
he's the guy who you can say, like, 100% having confidence and being comfortable where you are is the world of difference, right? I wouldn't advocate for him going back to the Premier League because he's just doing so well here.
Yeah.
But could he go back and play and contribute and start on, I don't know, half the Premier League teams? I would say yes.
Yeah.
I would say he would be really good.
And the argument of it's too physical in the Premier League doesn't stand because Italy is just as physical.
Yeah.
I mean, people are getting their ass beat. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
No, he was flopping like a fly the other night.
No, absolutely.
Here's something I wanted, because we did want to talk about a couple more things, but here's the thing though. I want to ask, like, this is the elephant in the room, right? So our domestic league is trash. MLS is trash. Does it hurt the US pool of players that MLS is so bad, comparatively speaking, to other nations' major leagues? I mean, it's not, we made fun of Turkey being the 10th ranked league in UEFA. And we're like, man, that's trash. Cause we said, on the last show, we said something about Nuri Sahin managed at Antalyaspor.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, they're like the 8th team in the 10th best league. So unless you're Galatasaray or Beşiktaş or Fenerbahce, you don't really matter in Turkey. Yeah. So the fact he managed for Antalyaspor, who gives a damn?
Yeah, okay.
So MLS, there's not a single team in MLS that could beat Antalyaspor.
Yeah.
That's my point, is that we made fun of the 10th worst, or sorry, 10th best league in Europe, where the hell would MLS be? And I think they're ranked somewhere in the are they like the 20s?
30s, I thought.
30s?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, a lot of the USA soccer, quote-unquote soccer heads, are talking about how the USL is starting to try to overtake the MLS.
Right.
I've seen that, and it's hilarious because the MLS is shitting in their pants. Messi's out the playoff. No one cares now. USL playoffs are amazing. We just had an upset last night, and then Colorado got a win. So now we have a final of freaking Rhode Island and Colorado Springs. So I mean, just the MLS is that bad, and the USL is trying to overtake them because they're adding the relegation, promotion and relegation. I mean, Union Omaha plays today in the final where they could possibly be promoted to the USL. So I think it does mess with it a little bit because players have to go off and play somewhere else and be discovered by someone because the MLS is so bad. And I do wish the MLS was better, but we're so far behind. I mean, for Christ's sake, we have talked about this. We beat this like a dead horse. The MLS's playoff format is absolute garbage. And until they can take shit seriously, you're not taking it serious by doing that, by having a series where there has to be a winner. Like, that is the most American thing ever. You can't have a draw. This is an aggregate. We have to have a winner.
It's the most American thing.
It is. Because what's the first thing I hear whenever I have the Columbia America de Cali versus Millonarios on the TV? Oh, what's this? Where's real football at? I'm like, dude, this is real football. Man, what are you talking about? These end 0-0. This end 0-0 and there's a draw. And I'm like, bro, it's still a game. Like, that's part of the game. It doesn't matter. That's the big thing. So what did the MLS do? They said, oh, let's listen to the Bud Light drinking guy and make it better to him. And let's make it
Nick's going to get canceled today.
Well, let's make it. No, think about it.
He's at a point.
No, we're the only league.
I want to have a winner. I don't like draws.
Yes, so
we'll just go to penalties.
Yeah, this
is some commie bullshit right here. What do you mean go have a draw and an aggregate and got another fixture?
Yep, so they made it. They made that person.
No losses or no messy. No, you... What is it? You can force a game three by a win, but in game two you can't have a draw. It has to go.
Yeah,
to
you got to win in penalty.
So instead of me, so exactly what USA would be playing to do, the United States men's national team, if they get a 0-0 draw, they advance.
Yeah.
But if you were to do that in the second leg of MLS, they'd say no, we must have a winner.
Yeah, you
and so if you played for the draw to advance, you could actually fuck yourself by actually going to PKs and losing. And then you force a game three. That is the most convoluted, idiotic format.
Yeah.
And it's a third match, though, would be actually the most American thing because it's more money.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, it is. He just said it is the most American thing. The Germans would actually have World War II type riots if you said that.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be
makes no sense.
Yeah, we honestly would be because it's just not in their DNA. It's like, hey, a good example of that is the relegation playoff in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
I go to your place, I get my one away goal, and then I park the bus for 90 minutes in my house.
Yeah.
It's up to you to break it, not me. I've already done my part.
A defensive struggle, not just
right. Which is why Nick and I said that 1,000%. Fortuna Düsseldorf is getting promoted because there is no chance in hell that Bochum is scoring three away goals. And boy, did they.
Yes.
But that's up to you to not come and crap your pants like a rookie.
Yeah.
You know, and when you have the upper hand at home, I mean.
Yeah, it's up to you.
It's just so weird to see it. Like, because I was talking when all three of us, I think, were at Ciudad Bonita a month ago. And it's just been a month now because, and they've only gotten one round further. That's how long. But Miami won the first game against Atlanta United. We're like, well, that's a wrap because they'll at least draw game two.
Yeah.
And they drew game two, and then Atlanta United won in penalties. Yep. And it's like, forces game three. I'm like, Nick, what does it mean? What do you mean forces game three? Why is there even a game three?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, there has to be a winner.
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Dude, this isn't
hockey where it has to go to.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to win the series. So the Galaxy guys were so pissed. Reus, Puig, all the stars.
How now he just will not call him Royce. He's now Reus. No
yeah. So Reus, I'll preface how I say it with that. I'm American and I do my best pronouncing.
Yeah, but you know you ought to say Royce.
No, absolutely. Yes. So
he's doing that on purpose.
Yeah. So
yeah, roll the R, buddy.
Dude.
Royce.
Galaxy have not played. By the time they play, it'll be almost 40 days or something crazy.
Jeez.
Because of the way the playoffs are set up. I swear to God, it's either 25 or 35 or 40 days. They were so pissed that they did openly did a complaint to the MLS, told them they need to fix it because they have not played in so long while they're waiting for these other fixtures to be done. That is absolutely insane. Where in what league in Italy would you see a final or a
Inter not playing
for 4 weeks because they're waiting for other teams to finish their series. Yeah. Like
the first 2 weeks, they're probably super happy they're getting rest.
Yeah,
and then there's a knee in that curve. We're like,
yes,
should we have them play?
Yeah. Well,
the other thing is, well, here's Tim. This one, I think it was a month ago. It was been a while since game one, and so to what he said. Now, okay, MLS. Puts their entire investment because last year they were in last place. Then they win some stupid cup so they could qualify for the FIFA Club World Cup just so Messi can be there. They just made that shit up. That competition was completely made up. But this year they actually did have the best record, most points, all this stuff. They were setting records left and right for average margin of win and all this stuff. And then little Atlanta United, the little engine that could, comes and knocks them out. So now where's the interest for the American viewer to say, well, I was only watching for Messi?
Yeah. Right.
So now who gives? So is there? How does that affect ratings? How does that affect viewership?
Big.
How does that affect the interest?
Yeah.
That's the bigger part, right? So back to your question, sort of what I'm interpreting as your question. It's a longitudinal look, right? You need to have interest in your domestic league, to be able to gather the interest from the younger talent and have people have the next LeBron say, "I want to go be a striker rather than I want to go play for Cavs."
Exactly.
So yeah, I think it all influences where we'll be. in terms of the national, if we're going to stick on the national team pipeline, it's got to get fixed. But MLS is too much business at this point.
Yeah.
They're going to change that. They are going to try to still cater to a typical American fan.
Yeah.
I still think USL and MLS will have some unholy marriage at some point.
You really think so?
We're going to see like some semi.
They will.
USL, I listened to you and I listened to that guy speak last year, and he said our mission is to overtake them, not to join
them. Yeah, sure. Well, I think once they start pulling closer, the MLS is going to have to sit down with them and be like, okay, let's figure this out before they do take over and the MLS misses out.
USL has ProRail, right?
Yeah, they're starting it. They're about to start it. They're getting it all organized. They've already voted yes to it, but they got to figure it all out. Because,
and right there, Tim, that legitimizes your league.
Yeah.
Right. So that'll be the next Will Ferrell movie about semi-pro when they all mash together. But they look at the cities that you were citing, right?
Yeah.
Omaha, Rhode Island.
Yeah. Dude, Rhode Island's good, man.
Colorado Springs. In their own pool, they're I'm sure they're very good.
Oh, yes.
MLS has Philadelphia and New York.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just...
Yeah, Miami, Galaxy. Yeah they would absolutely money is steamrail that. Rhode Island.
Exactly.
I just... The team that wins, how cool would it be the team that win the USL goes to the MLS? How cool would it be the team that won the League One, which Greenville is in? Greenville Triumph made it to the semifinal. Yeah. But Union Omaha beat them. If Union Omaha win today, then against Spokane, they could be promoted. You know, that would bring a lot of interest into the league. The MLS would be like, oh God, we're in trouble. And then next thing you know, the MLS makes it to where there is pro rel.
But where can we find that kind of system? The model our system. Oh, no. Everybody in Europe is
exactly. That's what I'm saying. Well, Japan did it. Japan said, we are going to be an international powerhouse, which they are now. I will say they're better than what they were.
Japan has come way up.
Exactly.
On the international team.
But they said in the late 90s, they said when the J League started, they said we're going to do J1, J2, J3. And guess what? Promotion, relegation, and now look at how good Japan is. They run Asia. I mean, Japan was just
then
drew.
South Korea,
they just drew their first match in 20 freaking matches. So it's just something the USA have to do. But Japan promised to do pro rel, and look how good they are now.
Look, the thing is, you do it. You can do it. You start off by doing one team, and then you migrate that later on into two teams.
Yeah.
And you know that's how you do.
That's what Japan does,
right? You don't just.
It's not like Brazil where four go up, four go down.
You don't exactly. That's a little extreme.
Yes, that's how they do it.
You have to. You have to start somewhere. All right. So the other thing is, as Tim said, how you model that. I mean, you model it after every other freaking league in the world,
every single one.
Nick, you said this, and it does ring true. Is that it brings it? How interesting is it? If I go to Japan and I start this, let's just say I start this this club called the Kabuki Warriors, and then they're in J3, and then the Kabuki Warriors win J3. I get you're bringing those fans, your fans of your local community, whether it be Union Omaha, whether it be Charleston Battery. You're bringing them to the big dance. You get to see them play in the top tier.
Yeah.
It you get television exposure. More people are now like, well, we're going to be on TV. I can't go to the game, but I can watch it from my house. Now I can watch it on ESPN or wherever on demand. Yeah. You know, it's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah.
Now, granted, if you're one of the guys that got relegated, get back up.
Yeah,
then.
Do better.
But it creates more interest. It creates more. It's not static.
More
it's dynamic.
More money.
And that is overall healthy for the game.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't. And I'll say this. We've talked about when they started MLS, and you talked about when they started J League. They had the choice to model it after the franchise model of American sports. And I say, you know what? If you're starting an American sport, if you're starting a competitor to the NFL. You're starting a second basketball league. Do it the way the NBA does it. Yes. Do it the way that the NFL does it. But this isn't a sport that was founded in America.
Right.
This isn't an American sport. That's what they say. Bring it home. Football's coming home. It's an English sport. And from that point, every single major league that is well respected in the world has pro rel. And it's the one I feel like shiner, the one black eye on MLS. If there's, besides the fact they have 87 teams in it.
Yeah.
Just way too bloated, and there's more coming. Am I right?
Yeah,
More coming?
San Diego.
Oh, good. Yeah, San Diego.
That, that'll be the thing that, that normalizes, equalizes some degree of that. They don't have the same kind of, you know, those cities don't have enough fan base. They don't have enough revenue generation.
Yeah. You're
gonna have to have that. Whoever makes it up gets that revenue share. And it's a way to do it, but you're never going to change. People in whatever Sioux City or someplace will have a fan base.
Union Hall is already up in the third minute. Their capacity in their stadium is 9,000, and it's on Paramount Plus. We could actually watch this game. That's now, amazing. Yeah, I mean, and to think that Union Omaha, the small city, just from this alone, there's probably 100, 200 people, maybe more, who notice and be like, hell, I'm going to try to watch them.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, they have a son and they raise him. He could be the next American Messi. Yeah. You know, that's what happens when you get this exposure. And if the MLS took advantage of being a new thing and did the pro rail starting out, I think we'd be in a different place nationally. I really do, man.
I think you're right. And yeah. So, I mean, I grew up in a small town in Indiana. We didn't have, you know, pro sports. It was far away.
Was it French Lick?
It was not French Lick.
Yeah, this guy's played the Larry Lick.
But, you know, for having those small towns, that's what's going to build your base.
Yeah.
And having those folks who can go, just like with Bundesliga, they've got small little towns that have.
Yeah, Heidenheim.
Yeah. I watch it all the time, dude. Yeah. I ask Rudy, where's this town? And you're like, dude, that's a farmer's town. And I'm like, they're about to win the third tier.
Yeah.
Well,
and it happens all the time.
It's closer to the baseball structure without pro rel. But, you know, they've got this tiering of all the way down to the smallest towns can have a team. And if you had enough talent, you had enough drive, and there's always hope at each one of those levels that you can make it up to the next one.
Yeah.
I think it's intriguing, but I don't see it changing if MLS is still in the driver's seat at this point. There's not enough in it for them to bring a little
bit. Well, let me ask you, how would you even see a merger? Because you already have damn near 30 teams in MLS. It's ridiculous.
Well, I think they'd merge.
They're going to merge, but sit it right on.
Yeah, they'd make them the second tier. Exactly. They'd make the U.S. They'd officially make the MLS. Then you could say MLS 2. Or keep it USL, but just have it officially the second tier. Because right now you can't say the USL is second tier. They're their own league. Like, sure, I can say, yeah, USL is like the second tier in the United States, but it's really its first tier because the second tier of the USL is about to be League One. You see what I'm saying? Right. So they really are a competitor to the MLS, but they could combine and become officially the second tier, and then they could start the pro rel. That's exactly how they do it. Now they wouldn't make a 60 team league like Critty was saying. It's already big and whatever.
They might take the lower tier of MLS.
Yeah,
like do an instantaneous relegation promotion.
They could. Yeah, no, absolutely. They could say next season if you're in this bottom four spot, you're going to the USL, and you're gonna have to work your way back up.
Because I mean, make no mistake. Joe Sixpack is going to need that.
Yeah.
Hurts like, yes. Oh, this is what you're talking
about. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, though, would USL agree to be, well, why should we be second tier? We're the ones that actually did this thing the right
way. No, absolutely.
Why? I mean, I don't see what, okay.
I could, yeah. Just look at revenue.
You talk about money talks, and that's true, but at the same time, I've heard the USL, I forget what his positioning was, but he was somewhere in there, basically, the marketing and like advancement of like the league, and he's like, yeah, I mean, we respect them in the fact that they play football, but we're not interested in being them, or we want to be more than they are.
Yeah.
So there's a competitive nature in it. It's not USL's not like, yeah, we're just happy to be little brother. Like, no, we're going to make them little brother.
Yeah.
Because they chose to do it. You know, they chose to do things in football or soccer, the Jerry Jones way, and that's not how it's done here. If you own the Dallas Cowboys, you can do it the Jerry Jones way. Well, I wouldn't do that either. But anyways, the Bill Belichick way.
I think until you get those metropolitan areas settled out, there is no way.
Yeah.
Until there's a Philadelphia team that has a USL and an MLS, like there's just not enough money for USL to truly compete.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, and I love my battery, but it's not that big of a stadium to be able to generate that much revenue.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a killer. 000. That's a killer is the fact that, you know, Messi can pack. Where do they play? They play Hard Rock? Is that where they play?
I think so.
Hard Rock. So that's where the Dolphins play, the Miami Hurricanes play there, and he can pack that out, right? I mean, Atlanta United, they were selling out the Mercedes-Benz Stadium,
yes,
left and right, 70,000 people
in the late 2010s. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, they were champions. They came in second, the second season in existence. They won the MLS Cup with Tata, who's actually the guy they beat, who's the manager of Inter Miami.
Almiron.
So let's tease Almiron that for a sec. Like, you know, Messi's driven a lot of eyeballs towards MLS.
Yeah.
What's it going to take?
I don't know. Has he? I don't know.
He has, but him going out hurt. I mean, they've lost tens of millions.
Well, that's it.
What's
right?
the premise behind bringing Messi, or at least my brain has to say, he came here to get the last of his career and set some things. But he's also got skin in the game, like we talked about before. He's got that sweet Apple deal and everything else.
Yeah.
He's also got a Mick Ultra deal.
Exactly. The goal was that they would bring talent and make the quality of the MLS product higher to get more fans, to get more action through MLS.
Yeah.
I don't know. So one, either how many Euros on their back end of their career would it take to actually bring better product and make it a better league?
Right.
Or what else gets it over that hump?
I don't know, man. It's going to take a very long time, but the MLS owners are jackasses, and they're the ones that started this to get it like this. And now they probably regret it because they know they had a chance to do the pro rel and it would have worked, and they would be so much bigger now if they would have, because they'd be on a global scale. No one in Germany cares about the MLS.
I can tell you that.
Yeah. No one in France cares about it. No one does. And do you think anyone's looking at what Oliver Giroud is doing at LAFC in France? No.
Everybody forgot he went there.
Yeah, exactly.
The Dortmund fans have forgotten Royce went to LA Galaxy. Yeah. They don't care. They wish him if by some chance they read on their Twitter feed that he won an MLS Cup, they'll be like, oh, well, Marco finally got a fucking league trophy. Wow. It took him, they'll look at that as it took him to go to, you had to go to a
MLS
tertiary league, not even secondary, a tertiary league to do it. Like, congratulations, but you don't get the prize, Mr. Roy. So, kind of wrapping this leg of the pot up. I mean, this MLS, USL, I think that's an interesting battle for the next 5 to 10 years to see where it goes. Who gets ultimate? You know, Tim, your good point is the fact that 5,000 seats at the Battery Arena is not gonna do it when Atlanta United can put 70,000 asses in their seats, you know, for a regular season matchup against Sporting Kansas City. So, I mean, that's just it. But you know, those teams that he's talking about in Germany that are farmer towns that won the third tier or whatever. I mean, Heidenheim won the second tier a couple years ago. When they do that, they change their entire infrastructure.
Right.
They add seats, they add seating capacity, they add more luxury boxes, they add more. You know, they do that. Battery can win the USL and they won't change a thing.
Right.
It'll just be next year's Battery.
Yeah,
it's not going
to. They tore down their stadium, for Christ's sake. I mean, they said, well, forget this. You're going to this baseball field.
It's not going to be. So to speak, oh, we're going to add luxury boxes so that Mr. Beckham can have a place to sit when Beckham's not coming to Charleston. He doesn't give a damn.
Right.
He's coming. He's going to come to go to the beaches. He's not.
Yes.
He's not coming to watch Battery players, scout players. I mean, I think they actually have a long way to go if they do go somewhere, and maybe there is some kind of agreement. I mean, your scenario is probably the best one, is where they say, okay, well, let's agree to disagree, but let's make amends. You guys be second. We'll do pro rel. So that way your teams, Rhode Island, Charleston, can come up to MLS. But the other question is, would Arthur Blank ever agree to have Atlanta United drop?
Yeah.
The current ownership, right there it is would the Jerry Jones of MLS, because Arthur Blank is just that billionaire. He's like, whatever I say goes, I'm always right. You're always wrong. He'll say, when I purchased this club, this franchise, I did not agree to have them drop in the second tier if they had the worst record. I'm supposed to get the number one draft pick.
Yeah.
So where's my Michael Vick? I want my Michael Vick.
I'm going to counter this by saying, to be an American owner and start a football team, an actual football team, you have to have some degree of passion in it, because it's a little bit of like, what the hell are you doing with your money? It's not because it's just the smartest thing to do. It's like they have to have some passion. So the purist in me says that they got to believe that structure is the right thing to do long term for the sport. I don't think any of them are in it purely for the money.
Yeah.
Of course, they're businessmen. They're definitely worried about the money, but I don't think that changes their revenue if they get the revenue sharing right. If they do relegation, which they're all supposed to be winning anyway.
Right. Well, we know when a team in the Premier goes down, we talk about it all the time, they get the parachute payment. The MLS will have to set aside some cash to say, if you do get relegated, we're sorry, but here's a little bit. Now try to get yourself back up.
There's a way to do it.
Yeah. And some teams in the championship do come right back up, and some screw it up and end up, you know, like Huddersfield, who are about to be in League One. Right. So if you remember, 8 years ago, Huddersfield was in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So it's just... it's something they're going to have to change, man.
And to do it now before there's other weird, bizarre expectations from the American fan base.
Like
Brits, when Leeds goes down, they don't go, oh my God, I'll never watch this team again. And that's just the fact of life, right?
Yeah.
Doing it now while it's still training the fans and the owners on what it's supposed to be.
Well, it's been around now. We're going on 30 years of MLS. It's coming up on its 30th anniversary. And... It's much like the WNBA in terms of like age, right? So they both started about the same time, and both those leagues started basically kind of for the same reason. It was kind of the women needed a pro league because they were now starting a women's dream team, and the NBA said, yeah, we'll finance you. And then for the World Cup in 94, FIFA said, okay, you guys got to have a legit, not the Pele, New York, whatever the hell they were. What do they call it? You know what I'm talking about, right?
Was it the Cosmos?
The Cosmos, yeah. Where it's like the Harlem Globetrotters of football. It's a joke.
Yeah.
You know, they actually have to have, you guys have to have a legitimate football league. And, you know, so you wonder what's next is both struggle for one reason and one reason more than anything else. As Nick has said, man, I ain't watching no damn women's basketball because you already have so much to choose from, right? You have Premier League, I'm just talking about sports too, not Nick in particular, but
yeah.
You have the NFL, you have Major League Baseball, you have National Hockey, you have the National Basketball League Association, you have if you want to stay on the domestic, you have a better league than MLS and Liga MX. You can watch Mexican football. There's Premier League. There's Bundesliga. I mean, what time is there left then for MLS? And on the same time, it's the same thing for WNBA. Why would you watch that when you can watch college basketball? And the thing is, I said, well, it's bad when the women's national title game, so two collegiate teams, Iowa and South Carolina, have 22 million viewers. 22 million viewers.
Yeah, probably more than the WNBA.
Right. And game one of the WNBA finals had 1.3 million viewers. That's the pro league. The pro league was outdrawn by amateurs, 19 million viewers.
Big boy. Yeah.
I will tell you this. My own two eyes watched Iowa and South Carolina play in the national title game. I didn't watch a single WNBA game this season. One, not even with Caitlin Clark. I watched the standings from afar on ESPN. I'm like, did they win? Do they win? Do they ever win? What is she doing? What is her points per game? Is she going to win Rookie of the Year? That's about it, though. That's about it. And that aspect. Can MLS ever really grow if they're always going to be, and this goes for the USL too, but MLS is supposedly our Premier League. Can they grow if you're always going to be fifth fiddle behind basketball, hockey, baseball, and American football? That's kind of the final question to the topic. I mean, Tim, go ahead and take that.
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know, it's still...
Let me ask you this before you answer.
Yeah.
I'm just going to – okay, it's Saturday morning. I'll just say Saturday afternoon. You have 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon. Your choices are you can only watch one. You can watch Arsenal and Liverpool, or you can watch Sporting Kansas City and Toronto FC. What are you watching?
That's not a good question.
Okay, so what do I need – what needs to happen for you to flip that answer?
To say – you can watch Arsenal and Chelsea or whoever else, or you can go to Charleston Battery game, and that's part of a bigger thing.
Okay.
I'll definitely go to the thing in person 100% of the time.
Okay.
So it needs to be propagated through that direct engagement rather than just through the eyeballs on the screen.
Okay.
My personal thought. And again, like I said, it's a longitudinal thing. It's got to have that kind of drive throughout the populace, right? It's got to be accessible. I don't know the last time I went to an NFL game, but my understanding is hundreds of dollars just to show up for nosebleed seats. not yeah. have any snacks, not take your family. But like you said, you know, Bundesliga, that's a family event.
It is.
Right?
It is.
So having beer's something.
Cheap, seats are cheap.
Yeah, having something that's much more accessible for that's, you know, go to games with your family and you have those memories. That'll be what gets kids' interest in the sport.
Yeah.
Everybody had like your 4-year old into this sport, but it was just to kind of keep like eat up time. We need to have like an actual youth academy system that goes and finds those talents. You know, kind of half ass it for baseball and other things like that. But you know, football here, soccer here, has the chance to really replicate that kind of find the youth, because everybody in Europe, that's a legitimate career choice essentially, right?
Yeah.
So you basically go on a separate track. And there's so many I don't know, call it whatever, underprivileged areas that go to a different sport.
Correct.
To be able to make it where this has got so much more opportunity globally for a kid from a tough neighborhood to go and make something based on their effort, based on their drive and their passion and their ability to kick a ball around.
Yeah.
Well, if you go to JD Sports in the mall, there's walls and walls full of basketball shoes.
Right.
There's not walls and walls full of football
right.
boots. Right. So that's it. Right. So if you're one of these underprivileged kids and you're like, well, you know, it's either drugs or sports and I choose sports. Where are my choices? Where's the equipment? Where do I buy it? Like, right. There's one shop, Lloyd Soccer.
Yeah.
And it's in Mount Pleasant, most privileged part of town, specifically right. on Longpoint Road, a privileged street in a privileged part of town.
Right. Yeah.
And they're, you're going to go to Northwoods Mall, man. Like, that's where you're going to go because that's where mama's taking you.
Yeah.
So you're going to go shop in the Jordan section. And that Jordan guy, pretty damn good from what I hear. You don't hear about, well, I mean, Where can I buy Landon Donovan's boots?
You know? If a kid in South America can play with, maybe not even shoes, and like a cardboard box and train his
No, understand. Yes, for sure. But Nick, so I'll give you, I gave him Arsenal and Liverpool. So I'm going to go deep dive with you, okay? Would you rather watch Grasshopper versus FC Zurich? Or would you rather?
He's into it. Yeah.
All right, that's too easy then. Hold on. Would you rather watch Auxerre versus Bordeaux? Or what? He's literally Auxerre and Bordeaux. Or would you rather watch Inter Miami versus Chivas?
Gosh, man, that's a decent one because I like Chivas. Yeah. Because Cade. I would probably have to go with the Mexican versus the MLS there because
intrigue.
Yeah, just the fact that it's USA versus Mexico, it just sounds more intriguing. I would have to watch Messi and Cade play. Yeah.
But if it was an MLS versus MLS team.
I would not watch it.
You would watch Auxerre versus Bordeaux?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, Bordeaux played today. They actually won in the Coupe de France.
And he knows this. See?
Yeah.
But here's the same question I asked him. So what needs to happen for you to say, no, I would rather watch Real Salt Lake versus Atlanta United than watch Bordeaux versus Auxerre or Grasshopper versus FC Zurich? Yeah. What do I need?
What would it take?
What do I, as MLS commissioner, need to do to see, to make Nick, when they're on at the same time slot, to make Nick say,
I'm watching that.
I'm watching my domestic league today.
I think I need some incentive. I need playoffs to change. I need promotion relegation. And once that happens, it'll make the players change the way they play and play differently because you don't know you're going to make the playoffs every season. That would be what it would take. And then I would watch 100%. I would go MLS route. And what's crazy is it wouldn't be too crazy in a 5-year, 8-year plan to make that happen. Change the playoffs and make the USL your second tier. That's exactly what I would want. And I would be right there.
So that's the thing. So I don't care about Real Salt Lake at the moment, but if I had the chance for the Battery maybe next year to go up and play against them, I'm suddenly more interested in what that team has. And that's just, I think that's the answer.
So, you made a good point about Huddersfield specifically. Yeah. That was a great point because, I mean, you start thinking about some of these towns in England. are very, very small brothers and sisters to the Liverpools, the Man Uniteds, the Arsenals, the Spurs, right? And they, but they can never play them unless it's by some random chance in an FA Cup or yeah. A Carabao Cup, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, like Brentford is a London club, but they for 109 years they didn't get they were in second tier below.
Right.
Now I get to play every year, guaranteed twice Spurs, mm-hmm. guaranteed twice Arsenal, guaranteed twice Chelsea. Yeah. You get to play your city rivals, Fulham.
Yeah,
and that instantly makes it more intriguing, also for your own fan base. Where if you're like, well, would I rather go watch it at the pub,
yeah,
or would I rather go in the stadium and watch it? It's like I'm sick and tired of playing Millwall.
Yeah.
I'm sick and tired of playing Wigan.
Right,
but now like, for Arsenal, yeah, I am going to go see them play Chelsea. So that you're right. Like if you can get that grassroots interest, of, yeah. if you can get the actual smaller cities or towns or whatnot to say, hey, yeah, I'm not going to watch them on TV. I'm actually going to buy a ticket, go in person,
and
view and watch my team play.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have a chance at actually having some kind of sustained success with it.
Or not, it's also an infusion of cash for those smaller clubs, right? So all these things, like they've stitched these things together over 100 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time,
right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it makes
it'll just take time, man. Yeah, absolutely.
But they just have to be okay with it.
And somebody.
But people are starting to uproar, man. People are starting to talk about it. There's pages that are F the MLS or pro rel to the MLS that actually have traction and a lot of coverage, man. And it's going to become bigger. They're going to feel it this playoff because Messi's out. And then people are going to start talking about it more and more. It'll just be, it'll take a few years. I can't believe
they didn't rig it for him.
You talked about it. Yes.
I can't believe. Because it's like, well, no. I mean, whoever wins is actually a legitimate champion. Because God knows the league wanted him to win. There's no other outcome. Like the story, Beckham buys the club. He goes there. He gets Messi. He gives him this deal he can't refuse, you know, Godfather style. And he comes in there and they just dominate him and Suarez, the Barcelona connection, 2017 Barcelona, whatever that means.
Yeah.
What if there were more of a forced marriage between, we've talked USL and MLS, but what about Liga MX and everything else and broaden that thing out? Still have to see.
Oh, that'd be crazy.
Well, that would be crazy. I mean, I think Liga MX, though, they view MLS as lesser than.
No,
I
just disagree.
I just think that they're like, look, you Yanks can't play. You know.
But what's in it for them? It's the same argument that we made before.
Yeah.
There's money in it for them.
Yeah.
And there's exposure and talent increase for all the MLS.
Historically, Liga MX beats MLS. Whenever we play in CONCACAF Champions League, they always whoop up on them. Monterrey and Chivas and Club America, they always whoop up.
And there's so much.
LAFC did it 1 year and Seattle did it 1 year, but that's it.
Yeah.
And there's so much more history in Liga MX.
Those clubs
have been around for a year. And there's legitimate. See, the difference is this. There are players that can't quite crack the starting 11 of an elite European side, but are still very good players.
Yeah.
They'll go to Liga MX and play and be superstars.
Yeah.
Whereas in MLS, it's 38-year-old Lionel Messi.
Yes.
Who's like, okay, well, I can still dominate there. And if they even make fun of it in Ted Lasso, where Roy Kent is literally at the end of his days at AFC Richmond.
Are you watching it? Come on.
I'm not. I need to watch it.
You do. Because you know all the terminology. Yeah. You're not going to be some idiot who doesn't know the terminology. It'll be like a glove that fits just right. Yeah, you'll get all the and they model them after Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
So Richmond is modeled after Crystal Palace. But to that point, though, it is like he's like, I still go to MLS and dominate.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you can't even keep pace with the most average of Premier League midfielders, but in MLS, you can. And that was a joke that was made on purpose.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So yes,
you're asking me for my creative solutions to the increase the talent. I think something like that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on that.
Because you talk about like passion of a fan base. I mean, that's where you're going to find some passionate fans.
Yeah,
these guys go crazy.
Well, real quick to wrap up, let's we're hitting here towards the Christmas season. You know, like I said, Nick's already got a Christmas tree up, which is just weird in and of itself. But Park Circle is looking. Look, man, it looks like
they got their lights on.
It's Christmas time here. Emmeline's already got her Christmas gift. I mean, it's right here in front of me, a new, brand new German Shepherd puppy. And So Christmas. So we're gonna kind of do, since it's the three of us, we'll do kind of our first half surprises real quick. Tim, we'll start with you. Like right now, like what club?
Find me some time, Matt.
What? Okay. All right. Well, yeah. Nick, let's start with you.
Yeah.
What? So far in club football, who's your surprise? Who's your biggest surprise so far this season, as far as overachieving? Like, who did you
overachieving in a bad way?
In a good way.
Oh, over in a good way. I think I'm really surprised and really happy with Chelsea. Man, I'm glad that everything is gelling and all these players are being used, and Neto looks to be a new star. I can't say Liverpool because I knew it could happen. It just depended on Slot. But
yeah, that was a lot to depend on.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But you knew if Slot could do it that they would be good. But Chelsea, they had the chance of being absolute crap because no one could manage those players and what they're doing. They're in what, the top four or five right now. And when they played Liverpool, they looked decent. They drew with Arsenal. So Chelsea, I mean, you asked me this on a whim. Chelsea, and I would say Barcelona, man. Barcelona are about to win La Liga. Yeah. They could win the Champions League because they're beating Real Madrid.
They only asked for one team, buddy.
Yeah. But it was just those two. Who's are the
favorite
ones.
Korean
the
one, league.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay, so I'll go next to him. I'll give you all the time you need.
Yeah.
My surprise right now, overachieving, is Eintracht Frankfurt. Yeah. I think that they have what they've done. They basically lose players every year, but they were able to keep Marmoush. They have added pieces to it. I can't believe that Topmiller got a second year, but he did. But you take off the 3-3, or excuse me, the loss to Dortmund in the very season opener back in August. I mean, that seems like an eternity ago. Now it's been 3 months. You take that out of the equation, and Frankfurt's looking really good. They're only right now 6 points off Bayern for top. They're in the Champions League spots at number 3, 1 point off of Leipzig. So to me, I look at a team like that, Frankfurt, as absolute overachievers right now. They score goals. They scored 7 goals against Bochum. But what's even more impressive about that match is 7 goals scored by 7 different goal scorers. That is unheard of. Nobody had a brace in seven goals. So they can. So when you ask, like, where do the goals come from Frankfurt, they can come from anywhere. Anywhere and everywhere. And then they already have the next Mohamed Salah and Omar Marmoush, playing on the wing for them. So Frankfurt, to me, because I'm not, you could say a lot of different clubs, but to me, Frankfurt is the biggest surprise right now in overachievement. Now, Tim, you got to go. Who's? Yeah.
Well, you guys invited me into this one for my U.S. men's national team homerism, so yeah. I see these things through the lens of where the Americans play.
Yes.
I don't pay attention to all the other leagues that you guys do, but I'd say, like Milan, from having lost some folks, Giroud's gone onto his retirement career in the MLS, and there was a lot of question on how, the Yanks would pull through. Pulisic's having an incredible year, at least an incredible start.
Yeah.
They're doing very well in a weird Serie A season.
Yeah.
And
it definitely is a weird season.
Yeah. But to that end, I'm your test case, right? Like,
right.
I never cared about Serie A at all.
Yeah.
Now amazing. I've got a lot of reason to care about two of the front runners. I didn't listen to all the previous pods where you guys were like, Didn't see them doing much. I think them in the top spots really is a surprise.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Nick, your biggest disappointment, biggest underachiever, just really you had them set so much higher than they actually are at the current point.
Yeah, I mean, I have
mine already locked in stone. But you go ahead. Tell me who your biggest
disappointment. Yeah, I had Arsenal at second, and they're like sixth right now, and they're not looking any better than what they were. They actually look a lot worse, and I don't think they're going to get it together. So this is an easy one for me. It doesn't take me long to think about it. Arsenal are a huge disappointment. Sixth place, don't look good. I don't care if Odegaard comes back. They need a striker. They don't. When you rely on Havertz to get you your goals, it's not going to happen. He's more of a guy who needs some support around him. He's not like Haaland, who's going to get you a goal no matter what. They're missing that. Sixth place, disappointment, because, I mean, even I hate them, and I had them second because I know they're good. I talk a lot of shit, but they are decent. but they're losing their way. And I feel that sooner or later, a lot of change is going to come. It's like the end of the Wenger time when he got an FA Cup cool, you finished second or third cool, but after 5 or 6 years, the chatter start, or 3 or 4 years, chatter starts, and then you put the fans against each other, and then you're looking at Wenger being fired. So Arsenal is my biggest disappointment.
Well, Nick, you're not going to be surprised by this, but I'm going with Borussia Dortmund.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
They are – I mean, you had them, I believe, in the season preview. I think you picked them higher than I did. I think I picked them second or third. I think I sold you on their summer because they sold me on their summer, and they did it to me again. I have been shysted yet again by the Borussia Dortmund propaganda machine, and it's just one of those things where I'm like, okay, another year, another great summer, another – just all this potential and all the potential and all the, you know, hype that goes around. Hype is a great word for it. You know, it's the hype train, right?
That's all it was.
All these players that have done all these things for these other clubs, like Bayer for Hoffenheim, and then, you know, Pascal Gross was a stalwart for Brighton Munich for years and years. And then you have, you know, Hummels and Royce obviously leave, so you think you're going to get younger. Adeyemi's supposed to take the next step. He doesn't. Malin's still inconsistent.
Yeah.
Then you have the one guy they did get who is playing at a high level, Serhou Guirassy, but football's an 11-person game, man. You can't do it by yourself. So just the fact they're in seventh place, they're about to miss Champions League if they keep up this pace. They have a rookie manager who, as we said last week on the show, did not have the experience to come in here and take on a major club like this and a major league. You know, you have to, there's levels of development and where both as a player and as a manager, where, you know, I think too many people are spoiled by the fact now that Zidane and why am I blanking on Leverkusen's manager? Xabi Alonso, they came from like a Real Sociedad and a Real Madrid B team, and they went and managed Real Madrid and Real, and then the Leverkusen.
Yeah.
And they both were massively successful in doing so, right? That's not going to be everybody.
No.
You know, and Antalyaspor is not really a measuring stick. So I just think, like I said last week, Dortmund hired with their heart, not their head.
Yeah.
They have this guy who's beloved by the fans. Yes, Nuri Sahin, as I said, he's a nice guy. But nice guys finish last. So Borussia Dortmund, for me, are absolutely the biggest disappointment. Tim, do you have a disappointment, a team that you thought would do better this year and just not quite lived up to the preseason predictions?
I mean, I'm dying to think of an MLS team so we can prolong the pain of your favorite subjects. You know, I don't pay a lot of attention to La Liga, but like everybody knows the struggles at Real Madrid. So
it's a good one.
I mean, sinking that much money. And yeah, exactly. But bringing all that talent together and going like, okay,
yeah,
we got the dream team.
Yeah.
And
now win everything.
They're supposed to dominate, right? And you look at the storyline from last year when, you know, Barca wasn't doing all the things they were supposed to do. But that's mine. I mean, got a lot of interesting stories in Premier League, but not like, I mean, Arsenal's not where they should be.
Nope.
But nobody who's like completely tanked it should be.
Yeah,
I can see.
All right, well, guys, this has been a very fun little international break get together here. You know, we don't get to do this very often. We do it actually quite often when we watch the matches. But we finally had a mic in front of us, and so we're like, okay, this is going to be the pod. We're going to give you this international break one. You know, needed to be talked about because Tim is very adamant about U.S. men's national team. And, you know, we talk about it so often, you know, when it's just the three of us or amongst us watching the actual game. We watched the match last week. Mm-hmm. And so we just wanted to put pen to paper on this and get this, you know, all of our thoughts out, because it is really, you know, if you're not going to do it now, when are you going to do it?
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get to host the World Cup.
No.
But ever so often,
I'll be 70 next time.
You might get it twice in your lifetime. If you're living in a certain country, you'll never get it.
Yeah, right.
It just depends, right? And now you're having more and more of these joint hosts. So you're going to have like three and four countries hosted as opposed to one. We're already seeing it this coming year with three hosting it, you know, and obviously America's going to have more games than the other two, but you know, still it's a joint North American effort. And so if you're not going to if you're not going to go ahead and make a splash right now with it being in your backyard in 2026, then when is it going to be time to do so? So we just, definitely wanted to get this out, man. Talk about some men's national team, where the team is, where they were, where they're going. Pochettino definitely stepped up from where we were with Greg, but we've talked about all the struggles today. We talked about what MLS needs to do. We've talked about what Pochettino has at his disposal, in terms of players to select from. And so, that's where we're going to go from here. When we, it's we all want the United States men's national team to do well. We're tired of just the ladies winning, and we want to see the men do something as well. And as you said, Tim, but Josie Altidore, pound for pound, player for player, it's a better team. It's probably the best team talent wise America's ever had, but it's not the best team yet.
Yeah.
Right.
And that is the key to get them to gel. Yeah. But any guys, any last words?
No, we're good, man. Game tomorrow. Ready to see him go to the final.
Yeah.
Or semifinal.
Yeah. I know some part of this is just you outsourcing on your not so favorite topics, but I appreciate the invite.
Oh, absolutely.
Of course, man. Of course. Yeah. I mean, look.
He likes
international football, man. This guy right here does. He loves it. But look, it's still football. It's round. We kick it. I'm always going to talk.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of I give Nick hell about international shit. And I'm like, at the end of the day, I will, if it's on TV, I'm going to watch it. I'm never going to not watch football. So if you ask me, like, would you rather watch the Saints versus the Browns or would you rather watch U.S. Men's National Team? I'll tell you, I'd rather watch U.S. Men's National Team football.
Oh, absolutely.
Even though the Saints are my team.
Huh? MLS or?
I'm not going that far. I'm not going that far.
I'd watch the Saints and Browns over the
I would too. Yeah, I'd watch the Saints and Browns over
and that says a lot.
That says a lot about your league, guys. So do something about it. All right, well, we're turning the lights out here in the basement. Again, we want to tell everybody to subscribe, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, at Beckham's Basement. And, thanks, Tim, longtime listener of the show, longtime friend of the show, longtime friend of ours, for coming in and doing this little roundtable. And, we will see all of you on the flip side. I think it'll be the next time we talk to the people. It'll be Thanksgiving week, I think.
Amp up the numbers so I can talk shit.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, this is The Basement Turning the Lights. We'll see y'all on the flip side. Que se te metió y no te deja aquí a salir.